Hello, everyone. My name is Tyler. I'm an alcoholic. I guess I can say my full name here. It's Tyler Duncan from Nashville, Tennessee. And so I've been trying to share some humility when I start speaking. And I realized last night that when I got here, I had a case of Red Bull and I packed no water and no food. And I asked my roommate if that was any difference than taking a case of beer, camping, and not bringing anything else. And there's a little bit of similarity there. So sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. My sobriety day is November 16th of 2011, and I'd like to share a few things. I'm not a pure alcoholic, and I did not get sober in a treatment center, both of which I have a very traditional standpoint on. I serve at the area level in Area 64 on the treatment committee. I am the district chair for my treatment committee in District 30. I just rotated out of treatment chair at my home group, and I'm GSR for my home group. And service is one of those things when I was told that when you wake up spiritually, you have no other choice than to give back. And it just happened naturally. I got involved in service. Basically, I asked, how do I become a home group member? And they told me to show up at the business meeting. And I had no idea what that was. And I found out when you show up, you get jobs. It's funny, you know, I bring sponsees to business meetings, and I'm like, don't worry, you just gotta just show up. And then all of a sudden they become the grapevine chair, or, you know, whatever it may be. But I'm very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll just kind of briefly qualify myself. I just couldn't drink successfully, and it took a while for me to figure that out. I had to come in and out of AA for a little while, and I was one of those people who got sober kind of young, when I was 27, and I never really tried to quit control drinking or control until I had an alcohol bracelet on my leg, and I couldn't stop when I had to. You know, it was like when it came time, I the only solution I had was to shove Saran wrap down between my leg and this bracelet and drink. And I was homeless in the streets of Nashville for a while, and it broke me. And I came back to AA, and the hand of AA was there for me. I have a service sponsor here and a sponsor here who have asked nothing from me than to give this away as freely as it was given to me. And so that's what I do. So treatment work. I guess I kind of started showing up at a meeting I went to, and they were announcing, hey, we're taking a meeting in on Sunday nights. You know, we're all welcome to you to come. And so I started showing up, and it just felt right. You know, and it says, you know, ask every day in the morning what you can do for the man who's still sick, and if your house is in order, the answer will come. And it was right around the time where I got my driver's license back, and I got my car back, and, like, you know, I started showing up, and the district committee, I'm in a district where it was kind of in the dark. And there's a lot of groups that are heavily active, but there really wasn't a lot going on at the district level. And a committee started at the district, and I started taking on that commitment. And then it was realized our home group, that we're not doing anything in service work and treatment work as wise. So we got involved in that. And I got to take meetings into an adolescent treatment center in Nashville. And it's it's changed everything. You know, for you guys to know, treatment work has changed everything. We follow the suggestions that come out of the workbook, which is my little plug here. But if you don't know what this is, I didn't either. And if you don't know what this is, I didn't either. It's the workbook. It's put up with, and it was basically, it was my instructions that I should read it, just kind of like when I got a service sponsor, read the service manual. And I did what I was told. And in there, it points out, you know, that it's highly suggested to take speaker meetings in the facilities. And then if you realize in the very beginning, you know, with some misgivings, they consented. And they allowed Bill to come and speak. So that's what we do. We take a speaker meeting in. And what I discovered along the process, I'm just going to kind of share with you, is what I've experienced with what works and what doesn't work. The most difficult struggle we have in Nashville is we have a number of detoxes, a number of halfway houses, five different districts, and more than we can handle, more than we keep track of. We've got groups, we've got individuals, we've got an intergroup, we've got treatment committees, and we have no idea who's doing what. And what we realized in this process, and it's taken years, and it's hopefully when the rotation takes place that legacy continues, but to carry the message consistently, I think that's what I'm going to focus on today, is just consistency. There's lots of little things that I've found in my work in treatment that often get overlooked. And what that was in the district, when I took that on, I was realizing what's in our district. What are the facilities in our district? What are the groups in our district? Where is our district? You know, the beginning is, what is a district? You know, like all these what, why, where, when things. And in doing that, we started realizing that there's facilities that fall in our group that we didn't even know about. In reading this workbook, I found out that halfway houses fall under treatment. Nursing homes fall under treatment. You know, a lot of these things I had never thought of. I thought treatment was an inpatient rehab. You know, what I didn't recognize was that there's a lot of areas of which the treatment committee can operate, and we weren't doing it. We weren't aware of it. What we also found is there's a number of facilities that don't really know what AA can and cannot do. And my work in treatment has allowed the opportunity with the cooperation with the professional community, with that committee, and allowing them to make presentations to staff members and, you know, educate. You know, at the very least, we can educate. What I've discovered in my own personal experience is that a lot of well-meaning people can do a lot of harm to Alcoholics Anonymous in treatment centers. And what I'm referring to basically is carrying a message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I come from a very traditional, very singleness of purpose, primary purpose, and what we try to carry out of our group and out of the district is, we can't have a purpose if we don't have a conscience. And in developing that conscience, realizing, like, what are we going to do? We decided, what are we going to read? We're going to read the preamble. We're going to do the traditions. We're going to do how it works. You know, we're going to have a speaker. And we decided, well, the most consistent way to do that would be to make a workbook. Let's make a binder. We've got binders at our home group. Why not have a binder for the treatment committee? So we made a binder at the treatment committee. And out of that, you know, it doesn't matter if John takes over for Sally or Sally moves over here. Whether you go to a detox or you go to a halfway house, whether you go to an inpatient, you're getting the same format and the same message. We discovered that, you know, in these facilities, there's people going 3, 4, 5 days a week, but what about Tuesday? What about Thursday? What about the fifth day of the month? You know, we get all these. What I discovered is that we have rotations. We have, I'll take the every other, or I'll take the first and the third, or I'll take the second and the fourth, but who's going on the fifth? And we started finding these holes and started filling the holes in the boat, started plugging. And it's been a process. You know, we developed a treatment committee, and we currently have about 10 people on the committee who actively take meetings in Nashville and into a number of different facilities. And what's happened out of that and out of this district coming out of the dark is we begin to have district meetings where GSRs are represented there. And in that representation, they can go back to their group and say, hey, you're looking for a service opportunity for your home group? Well, this facility is available on Tuesday nights. This is available on Sunday. This is available on Thursday. And then doing that, it's allowed the groups to then take this on. And it's refiltered the power out of the committee back to the group where it should be in the first place. And it's been beautiful. A number of groups in our district that weren't really involved have begun sending members to the treatment committee, sending members to the district meeting. And now they're taking on service commitments. And they're getting involved. And it's been beautiful. It's been beautiful to watch. I don't have any idea for how long I've spoken for. I'm just kind of going 1,000 miles an hour up here. I'm very all over the map. My experience with treatment is that recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another. And the seeds we plant, whenever I go to a facility, I say where my home group is. I say the time and date and location of my home group. Then you come out there. What I've discovered is there's a lot of, I hope I don't cross the line, but I think I'm going to. There's a lot of what I've discovered as apathy in this process of communicating with the groups and trying to find some unity, where it's fine. We've been doing it this for years. There's no need to change. Everything's, you know, this is what we've been doing. And the probing question we ask is it working? Are you getting guys coming out of your treatment center to your home group? Are you getting sponsees? Are guys getting sober, or females? And what I've found is that when we go into these facilities and we carry a message of Alcoholics Anonymous, they start showing up at our home group. They start getting sponsors. They start getting sober. They start taking that message, and then they start taking the meeting themselves back to the facility they went to. And for those of you that had the opportunity to do that, it's I don't know if they make a word in the English language for it, but it's my purpose. You know, it's my purpose. As it's been said, I'm divinely crafted to help another alcoholic. And when I go into a facility, when we go into a facility, I carry a message that has depth and weight. At the very least, if I go in there, I can disturb them. That's great. We can work with that. You know, and you know, not exhibiting that passion for crusade and reform, not talking down from a spiritual hilltop, using everyday language. You know, it's a number of different things, just little things, but they add up. It's removing the blocks and the excuses and the reasons to not take this path. My involvement in the district committee has been humbling, would be the best way to word it. It's caused me to grow. It's caused me to ask questions. It's caused me to get involved, and it's caused me to see a completely other side of Alcoholics Anonymous. Service work's kind of like a black hole, what I discovered. It's kind of like you show up at a business meeting and you just start falling in, and before you know, you're kind of free falling, and it's progressive, I guess. You know, the old things aren't the same as they used to be. And you know, one of the difficult places where I'm at, just to be transparent, is time for rotation. You know, all these years of work of building and coming out of the dark and passing that torch. And to be honest with you, I'm scared. You know, it's coming to realize the true value of having an alternate. Before I was ever a GSR, I was an alternate. So yeah, it's an interesting time, an interesting place in Nashville. There's a lot going on that I didn't even know was present. I'm when I go into a treatment center, just to share when I speak, I like to point out what is Alcoholics Anonymous, what it is not, and if I at very least touch on the obsession and the allergy. If I walk out of a treatment center not introducing the physical and the mental nature of alcoholism, I feel like I've done an injustice. I feel like I've done an injustice if I tell clients to substitute drugs where they see alcohol. And that's just my position. They asked me to speak, so I'm going to give you my interpretation. But it's a singleness of purpose, and I hold very tightly to that. And in doing that, what I have found is it allows my fellowship to grow. I get a number of guys' numbers, females' numbers from CA and NA, and I refer them to the places they belong. Like Don Press said, we kill addicts and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm just going to share my opinion on that. I found home in Alcoholics Anonymous because in the workbook or in the binder, it references that what we do by focusing on that singleness of purpose, we cut out the opportunity for denial. We put the microscope on the alcohol, and that's what it did for me. And I was one of those people that found out I was an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous. I found it out because we were reading out of the big book. I had a sponsor who said he's going to sponsor me, basically. I had very little to do with it. And he took me, and I found myself in the doctor's opinion. You know, and when I go into facilities, I take my big book with me. I take my 12 and 12 with me is what I was taught to do wherever I go to take my book. And one thing I do when I'm in these facilities, I remember that, you know, I'm operating as a guest. I'm operating as someone who is not privileged, but but I've been given an opportunity. I don't have rights. I follow the rules. And if I can't follow them, then we don't go. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know what it was. What I've found in that service work, and we were kind of talking on the way down here, what I found in treatment work is as I get to apply and service the traditions, and finally, you know, I get to push out that part of me that doesn't want to surrender, the part of me that wants to walk my own journey. You know, that's where that group conscience, that's where we're following the suggestions, that's where I'm inviting God into the middle of this. What I've discovered in working in these treatment centers is we're asked to do things that we can't do. We have a number of facilities in Nashville where it's questionable whether there's paid 12-step work or not. It's been tricky. You know, it's just the best way I can explain it. It's been tricky. The gentleman that I've had the privilege of working with, when I go in there, I'm playing by their rules. You know, when I go in there, I wear clothing something like this. Yeah, you know, I'm from Michigan, so I could really care less about the SEC. But I don't wear Alabama, and I don't wear Florida, and I don't wear team memorabilia. I just come in as a regular member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I've discovered in doing that is packed that I don't give them a reason. I don't give them an excuse. I don't give them an opportunity to see the differences. I get to give them nothing but similarities. One thing I've found in treatment work is that we're on that firing line. You know, I haven't read the most recent member survey, but in 2011 it was roughly around a third of the people coming to Alcoholics Anonymous through treatment, and we get to be on that firing line. We get to be the people who bring the light. And I have to, you know, what I ask myself is, what message am I carrying? I'm carrying a message, but what message am I carrying? And what I found, like I said earlier, that having that group consciousness and having that clear-cut instructions where there's no leeway, there's no room for misrepresentation. We go into these facilities and we carry consistently in and out and in and out, week after week after week after month after year, and we show up. And what I found in that consistency is people get sober. Not that we make them sober, but we provide the fertile soil for that seed to grow. It's funny, when I was coming up here, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about for 20 minutes. Because it's usually like 5 minutes or an hour, you know? And I was like, well, I'm not going to get up here and share my story. Because I didn't think that would be relevant to the topic we're talking about. But my brief experience with treatment was... I didn't know you went to treatment to get sober. I had friends that went to rehab, and they came back and were still having fun, and either they disappeared or they came back and maintained the life. I had no other experience or example of what rehab was. I went to a rehab where there was state funding. I had no health insurance. I was homeless, and what I had in there, if the only thing I took away from that facility was there were people who came in there who said they were sober. You know, and that, for that I owe. If at the very least I can be a representation, a message, if my message is just being physically present, that sobriety is possible. You know, I just couldn't understand someone sober and young coming into a facility, and I just couldn't get it. I was like, what do you mean, no? Like, we don't do sober? You know, and like, I went there, I thought it was really like rehabilitation. Like, you blow out your knee in football, and you go to rehab, and like, they fix you, and you do some exercises, and then you're back in the game. Like, that's what I thought treatment was. I had no other experience with it, you know? So I have to ask myself, when I go into these facilities, what experience am I giving them? What am I sharing to them? And it's been an honor, and it's been a privilege. I don't know who asked me to come speak. I got an email, and I was like, I don't think that was for me. Then my ego is like, yeah, it was for you. But I'm very grateful to be sober. I'm very grateful to be able to give back, and I'm very grateful that y'all listened, and for what you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler. Good stuff. My next speaker is a guy, but I met these three guys. I mean, I was wondering when they were going to get here. Billy showed up first, and I was like, where's the other guys at? I was told that if nobody showed up, to get somebody in the audience to fill in. So I was getting ready to ask y'all. But next guy, his name is Andrew A., and he's from New York.
Wow. My name's Andrew. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi. My sobriety date's July 17th, 2003. My home group is the Bridge to Sobriety in New York City, and I have a sponsor. He's here in this room, and I have three sponsees. And my qualification of my story is precisely relevant to what we're talking about here today. And before I give you a few minutes of that, I just want to read something out of the 12 and 12 real quick, kind of set the tone for my 20 minutes. Practically every AA member declares that no satisfaction has been deeper and no joy greater than a 12-step job well done, to watch the eyes of men and women open with wonder as they move from darkness into light, to see their lives quickly fill with new purpose and meaning, to see whole families reassembled, to see the alcoholic outcast received back into his community in full citizenship, and above all, to watch these people awaken to the presence of a loving God in their lives. These are the substances of what we receive as we carry AA's message to the next alcoholic. And that's what was done for me on a hot July night, and that's what I've been doing for the last 11 and a half years. Real quick, just to give you my resume, I had my first drink when I was 8. Nobody poured it for me. It was blackberry brandy. It was generic. And it was hidden, and it was the only drink in our house. And I knew precisely where it was and how to get to it at 8 years old. I drank that blackberry brandy. I ran back down the hallway to my bedroom, closed the door. And what I did next is precisely what qualifies me to stand at this podium. As soon as that brandy hit my belly, I ran right back down the hallway, got right back up on the phone books, and went right back to the brandy and took another sip. And so it went for about 20 years. Around 27, oddly enough, I found myself homeless in New York City, jobless, penniless, living in the open-door homeless shelter, and wondering how I got there. And I didn't have any answers. And every day they kick you out, you know, so they can sweep and mop, and they tell you to, like, go get a job, and what if you can't, come back, you know. So I waited around the corner, and I went back, and when I went to check in, the guy said, you don't need to be here, man. You're too young. You're too pretty. And, you know, I said, well, where do I go? And he sent me underneath the Port Authority of 42nd Street in New York City to a man by the name of James Greer, Project Urban Renewal. And I spoke with him, and I gave him as much information as I could, and he gave me a hug. He called a detox. He swiped me on the one train and told me where to get off. And I did exactly what he told me. For the first time in my life, I took direction to the T because I was scared. And I checked into St. Luke's Hospital, and the ER was really busy and the wait was really long, so I faked a heart attack. And when they got me in the back, you know, I said, I just need to get the detox, you know. And I had never been in detox. I had never been in rehab. I had never, you know, nothing. And I worked in the medical field, and my initials are AA, and I had no idea about you guys. So they kind of shuffled me up to detox, and they gave me the, you know, triple Lindy cocktail, and put me in my bed. And on the morning of July 17, 2003, I opened my eyes, and I looked at the bed next to me, and there was a very large black man with a huge afro and big sunglasses, and he said, "Good morning, my name is Mr. Rogers." And I, you know, maybe they got the floor wrong or something, you know. But okay. And I walked out into the hallway, and my butt hanging out of a hospital gown, and, you know, kind of just checking everything out. If you've never been into a treatment facility, it's a very interesting place, especially as a patient. And, you know, I walked up to the front desk where the nurses were, and tried to score a date with one of the nurses. "You don't know what I do when I'm not in here. Make a lot of money." And she smiled and laughed and you know, came and just checked my ID band, and she said, "AA will be here at 8 o'clock. They were. And, you know, there's a lot of people in this room, and there's a lot of people that bring meetings into treatment centers. I just am fortunate enough to have been one for my whole sobriety. There's people in this room that brought meetings into treatment centers that I was a patient in when I was getting sober, and there aren't words, you know? But there's actions. That's what the 12th step is. And that's what I do, to say thank you to the people in this room that brought me the message when I was just like AA number 3, wondering how the hell to get out of here. And, you know, when somebody sent me an email and asked me if I could come to Atlanta and just share about that for a minute as it relates to my story, we were going to go to a wedding for a girl who got sober in our home group and, you know, got married today. But, you know, this is more important. I got sober over a very long period of time. They wished me a long, slow recovery. I had no idea what they meant. And it took, you know, every bit of the first 5 years to get my marbles back. And in detox that first night when AA showed up, I was still in a fog a little bit. I had been drunk every day for at least a decade. And, you know, that man came in and he looked nothing like me. Sounded nothing like me. I didn't believe he was without alcohol or drugs because I didn't believe anybody could go through life that way. But when he got done giving his 20 minutes, I felt something that I had never felt. And what it was a tiny, tiny little pinhole. The tiniest light shining through it that maybe I could make it till tomorrow night at 8 o'clock when they came in again, without having to leave, without having to drink, without having to go crazy. Just maybe this guy did it. I can do it. And the next night, 8 o'clock, they were there again. Different people this time with a different, you know, set of specifics, but the same message. And that pinhole turned to a nickel. Next night, a different fellowship showed up. Message was very similar. It worked. It expanded the nickel to a dime. And by the end of 10 days, I knew I could take the walk from 110th Street to 59th Street to get from detox to rehab. And that's what they wanted me to do. I knew I could do it. And I didn't have any money to buy any beer on the way. So, I mean, I was, you know, I had a pair of black Dickie pants on, a wife beater tank top, a New York Yankees hat, a pair of Stan Smith. And that's it. I had no ID, no money, no change, no nothing, man. And, you know, they sent me out of there and sent me to rehab and told me I would be fine. And I went to Smithers Rehab on 59th and 10th, and I checked in there, and they put me in a bed. And my first night there, man by the name of Vincent, classic quintessential New Yorker, brought a meeting into this rehab. And I don't know what came over me, but when he got in front of us and started speaking, I wanted to hurt him. I really did. I just, something about him that was like, oh my God, I had to like sit on my hands and like, you know, not, and I didn't know what it was. And then, you know, later on in recovery, I learned if you spot it, you got it, you know? And, so Vincent gave this amazing qualification that was absolutely nothing like mine. Actually, polar opposite, complete different. And he talked about getting the message in the last year of a very long prison sentence by the grace of some AA members and a corrections officer and God and a big book and the Joe and Charlie tapes. But he got the message. And he was bringing it on Thursday nights to a rehab. Something happened that night when I heard Vincent speak, and I knew not only that there was a possibility that I could do sobriety, there was something about this guy. He had been through hell just like I had. He had seen it all, man, and gave precise instruction of how he was told to recover. And I knew there was a roadmap to get back from the depths of hell that I had been to, and that it was possible. And I could conduct myself as a man amongst men and walk around and look pretty cool doing it, you know? And I knew I wanted this thing. I wanted sobriety that night. August 14th, 2003. I mention that date because it was the blackout of the Northeast and something that shaped the next 11 and a half years of my recovery. And during that blackout, the nurses and the staff came around to us in rehab and they said, give us your address because you're going to have to go home for the weekend. It's a state emergency. We're the only floor with electricity. If the electricity goes out and the generators go out, we're the only floor. And we got a lot of ventilated patients in the hospital that are more important than you. So you'll be going home for the weekend and you can come back on Monday. You have a free pass to come back on Monday. I don't know many rehab patients that have ever been told that. And, you know, right away, man, the engine started and, me and this other guy, he had a Silverado parked around the block. And we got two female hostages, you know, that were ready to go. We had $84 between the four of us, and we were going to drive to Colorado for the weekend. And we were going to come back Monday. It's funny, man. I mean, you know, I laugh. I don't want to, you know. Yeah, so, you know, I'm ready to go. And, you know, they say the last part of a relapse is actually to drink or to drug. They say, you know, there's like 106 actions that happen up here first before that relapse. They all happened, man. All you had to do was sprinkle something on me. And, you know, I was just like, let me out of this place. And I went up to the front desk, this wonderful man, Richard, and I said, let me go. Come on, you know, 3 hours now you told me I got to get out of here. Let me out of here. And he said, relax. It takes time to fill out your paperwork and generate the passes. You know, just relax. We'll get you out of here soon enough. So the man that brings the regular Friday night meeting into the rehab was stuck in the New Jersey transit system underground coming back into the city due to the blackout. And there was some guy up in a meeting in Washington Heights who was friends with the man who brought the Friday night meeting in. And he said to himself at the end of his 6 o'clock meeting in Washington Heights, I wonder if I should walk 125 blocks in this heat and blackout and bring the kids in the rehab a meeting. And he did. And I know that voice. I've gotten that voice before. I've heard that spirit talk to me. So I know why he decided to take that walk. He had never brought a meeting to the rehab before. And he brought a meeting in, and he was a gay photographer, and I was not, and that had nothing to do with it. What he talked about was recovering from a seamlessly hopeless state of mind, body, and soul. And you got to remember, when he showed up at 8 p.m., I thought I was leaving to go get a 40-ounce of Old English. And they let this guy in, and they said, there's an AA meeting in 5 minutes in the cafeteria. What? Man, AA. And I sat for that meeting, and I put my hand up the second he stopped talking. And I said, man, I just want to go get out and get drunk. They told me I could leave. I need to leave. My belly's flipping. I got to go. And, you know, this big Dominican woman grabbed me and held me and rocked me in her arms until midnight. And I fell asleep. And I woke up in the morning, and the lights were on. And none of us had to leave. We didn't have to start our day count over. We didn't have to come back on Monday. And that meeting saved my life that night. I don't know what's going to happen if I put another drink in me. And I don't want to find out. And that night was about as close as it ever got. And, you know, I went to a halfway house after that, their halfway house on 102nd Street in West End, and they recommended that I get a sponsor, I get meetings in the neighborhood, and I, you know, basically get a program in my life. And so I went to a meeting on a Saturday and started talking to this, you know, young, sober lady, and she said, meet me tomorrow. We're going to this guy Vincent's house. He's this Italian guy. He cooks for every AA in the city. I didn't go for the meatballs, you know. I went because a young lady was interested in me. And I'm like, you know, sober 45 days, living in a halfway house. She likes me, you know. And I met her at the meeting and, you know, she took me to Vincent's, and I walk in, and there's that guy, Vincent, who brought that meeting up into the rehab. And he knew what to do with me right away. He threw a towel in my arms, and he said, go ahead and do some dishes. And cause, you know, I was like holding the wall up, man, around all these people, you know, having fun and socializing soberly. I didn't know how to do that. And, you know, I started washing dishes. I was blown away. This guy, Vincent, remembered my name. You know, he knew my name the second I walked in the front door. And at the end of that day, he said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And he said, I want you to meet my sponsor. And he introduced me to Emilio. And Emilio introduced me to his sober wife, Grace. And they introduced me to Sober AA in Staten Island. And they're in this room today. And man, Vincent asked me if I wanted to go and bring that meeting with him the following Thursday night. And I said, absolutely. And I went with him every Thursday night. And I didn't say a word. I just sat there to show these guys that I was just here. I was just feeling what you were feeling. And you can do it. And something happened, and Vincent had to leave the city, moved out to Jersey, got married, you know, all that stuff that happens when you're working a program. And, you know, he handed over this meeting to me. This is an untraditional AA meeting where they've tried going through the channel, the proper channels through intergroup and getting a, you know, a service position and a commitment. And they've been, I don't know what to say, I can't speak for them, but they choose not to go through that system, and they choose to still have 7 meetings a week because they know it works. And they ask that if you take a meeting, you hold responsibility for it, either, you know, until you move, or they just want to hold someone accountable to have that AA meeting in there. And I get that, you know. And when Vincent left, the meeting became mine. And I've been doing it ever since. And whenever people ask me if they can be a part of it, I always need help. I've actually given every other meeting to someone who's shown up every Thursday for years, and I will eventually hand off the other two Thursdays a night that I do, but that commitment has kept me having a service position for my entire sobriety, and I can't say enough about that. There's been low times in my sobriety. It hasn't all been, you know, amazing, mostly amazing. But there's been some rough times, and I thank God that I was connected and I knew I had to get out of my bed and bring that meeting into that rehab. People needed to hear the message of recovery. They needed to hear that the first 164 pages of our big book can work for absolutely anybody. They needed to hear about having a relationship with a higher power, just like I did. And luckily, Thanksgiving falls on Thursday night, so every Thanksgiving, I bring about 15 drunks from the neighborhood in there, and we have a party and share for about 5 minutes, and it brings love into the rehab. So I'm just going to, you know, I don't know when I'll ever get this chance again, and I got one more minute left, and I'm just going to tell you a quick story about my sobriety. And that guy, Vincent, somewhere around five and a half years, he told me that working three jobs was not really good for my sobriety. And he mandated a 90 and 90 on me. And he said, I need you in Perry Street every day, 12:15 or 2:30. I don't care. Pick one. So I went every day. One day they asked me to speak, and I spoke. And there was this Angelina Jolie-looking chick in the front row, you know? Man, what's her name? And, you know, I hadn't dated anyone for 5.5 years. And she put her hand up. She said, my name's Sky. I'm an alcoholic. I got 23 days. And I said, 23 days. I couldn't talk to her. I wasn't allowed to. You know what I'm saying? I didn't talk to her for a year, even though she would come up to me to thank me for that day and my qualification. Make a long story short, and to get me off the podium, we had an amazingly beautiful wedding. And she's right there. And she's speaking tomorrow. Life is good. Sobriety is amazing. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Andrew. Wow. I can relate to all the stuff you all talking about. I'm a product of treatment. Came out of a treatment facility. I remember that dark place and the light I felt when I came out of there. And I just wanted to give that back, and I get the opportunity to do that today. It's amazing. It's amazing. To watch those lights come on, these guys that have no hope. Okay. Next speaker. He is a guy from Minnesota. His name is Billy W.
Hi, my name is Billy W., and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Billy.
Good afternoon. I have a sobriety date of February 6, 2006. I am sponsored. My sponsor is sponsored, and I sponsor other men, and I'm always willing to. Home group. My home group meets at Monday nights at 7 o'clock at Shepherd of Lake Lutheran Church in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Everybody makes fun of our accent, Minnesota, so... Anyways, I'm looking forward to this to be over so I can start enjoying my trip to Atlanta here. Anyways, it's an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you to General Service Board and Eva for the email. I was surprised to get it, and it's an honor and privilege to speak at any AA meeting, let alone the international. But, you know, this is my second international convention. I went to San Antonio in 2010, and I was about 4.5 years sober. And it was just an amazing experience. I look back on that as my stepping out of my AA bubble that I was in early recovery, and really becoming a part of AA. It was just watershed for experiences after that. And a lot of it was due to fear. I mean, it was the first trip I took. I was full of a lot of guilt and shame, and I didn't want to take any trips for myself because I had a young daughter at the time, and I just didn't feel I deserved that. And I finally did that for myself, and that's where that all started. And I also learned to dance. I lost the fear of dancing at the last international. Full of a lot of pride and worried what other people thought of me when I was out on the dance floor dancing. Of course, when you can go in that room like last night or tonight around 5,000 other people, you look like the fool if you're not dancing. So it's I always like to think about that when I think about the international and convention, and I hope to, God willing, be at many more. But the AA has been an absolute blessing in my life. I have to look no further than I have a six-month-old son, and this is me and my wife's first trip away from him since December. And we kind of targeted this because she's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous as well. She's here in the audience, as me and Andrew talked about before this, too. And I, too, didn't talk to her for a while when I saw her because she was out of my league. She was 10 years more sober than I am. And anyways, I don't have to look no farther than my son to see that AA works. And he is living proof that that happens because through many attempts at being with my wife, it never happened until I had a 12-step experience with her and she saw me in a different light. So anyways, speaking of 12-step experience, I was asked to share my experience, strength, and hope as it relates to carrying the message into treatment facilities as it relates to my recovery from alcoholism. There are kind of three parts to this. I'd like to talk a little bit about my treatment entrance into AA. I am somebody that came through treatment. I had never been to an AA meeting. I went into a treatment center in Minnesota, and I looked in the 2011 membership survey. 32% of us are introduced to AA through a treatment facility. So one out of every three of us in here, there's more than likely, you found AA through a treatment center. And it's not the norm, you know, for everybody. Of course, when we come in here, we try to look for similarities, not differences. But it just happens to be my experience. And I look back on that time in that treatment center, and I was completely unfamiliar with Alcoholics Anonymous. On February 6th of 2006, that was my first day sober. And before that, my life was spinning out of control. I had asked for help that morning from my dad because I was down there for work with him. And I'd 6 months prior, I'd spent the weekend in jail in Las Vegas when I was out there for work. Wasn't even out there 12 hours, and I got locked up in Clark County Jail. One of the worst experiences of my life, and I still came home and just kind of brushed that off as other people's doings to me, and just continued on. But it took all the fun out of it because I knew where it was heading. And somehow that morning in February, I went out. It was actually the Super Bowl. I was going to have a couple drinks and, go to bed early, as my intentions were, and get up for work. And stayed out all night, and it was not much different than any other weekend night I'd go out. But you know what? That night, came home and paced the floor, and I knew I was going to knock on my dad's door, who was my boss at the time, and I worked with him. I think that was going to be the end. So this, for some reason, that the thought popped in my mind that my life was never going to get any better. This is a progressive and fatal condition that I didn't even know I suffered from, but I knew I didn't see good things coming, and I still had a chance at having some sort of life. And I didn't know you could be happy and content in sobriety. I thought I was just making a choice that was a little bit better than the other one of just holding on for dear life and not drinking. Maybe I can take some sort of life out of it. So I found differently, thank goodness. So what did I do? I called a treatment center is the first thing. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a bunch of preconceived notions of what it was. You know, I just thought it was a bunch of older people hanging on, talking about how bad life was without alcohol, and supporting one another. That's really what I thought it was. And that whole contempt prior to an investigation, nor did I choose to ask, or nor did I ever go to a meeting to find out. And I really didn't know. I was doing a lot of other things at the time. I didn't know what alcoholism was. So what I realized today is I was doing a lot of other things to manage my alcoholism in between the drinks that I was having. If I really wanted my way, I wanted to get drunk. And when I started drinking, I could not stop. There was no telling what was going to happen. So I sought help from a treatment center. I had a two-week wait to get into the treatment center. And I had made a decision to quit drinking. I thought I could probably make it, but I was scared, didn't know what to do. I called them, and they didn't have any suggestions for me other than call Minneapolis Intergroup, AA. I'm like, what is that going to do? What is calling a phone number going to do for me and go to a meeting? I just don't know what that's going to do. So anyways, right there is the first time that AA, you know, carried a message to me through a treatment center. That phone number, that hotline is right there for them. I'm sure they use it all the time. And so I took their suggestion because I had nothing else to do. I was out of solutions for myself, and I went over to the town next door, not in my own town, and went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I found a bunch of people like me there that were telling my story, and I felt very comfortable. I didn't want it to end, and I didn't know what the heck I was going to do with the rest of my day. Didn't think about going to a meeting the next day. I thought I'd have to, you know, wait till the next meeting because I was too scared to go on another one. Took everything to go there. But that's how that would started with through that treatment center. And once I got into the treatment center, every night there were speakers that showed up. And I sat there and just, I laughed for the first time. I started relating to their stories. I started to hear stories that were much worse than mine. And recovery stories that people, you know, far exceeded their expectations of what would happen in recovery. And I really started to relate. And once more, these were speakers that were active in Alcoholics Anonymous and came and carried a message to me and were willing to do that. I heard things like, get a sponsor, read the big book, go to meetings, get a home group, 90 meetings in 90 days. That didn't make any sense to me when somebody told me that the AA meeting, but the longer I sat there and found out what I suffer from and what I'm going to need to do, I thought if I do that, I can start doing some of these things that they're suggesting. But that's some of the things I remember from treatment. And every Saturday morning, there was an AA meeting on the unit that came, and that was very helpful to just sit through an AA meeting. I really wasn't understanding a whole lot what it was. Somebody handed me a book to say, here, read how it works. Start it out. I looked at the guy. I'm like, what are you talking about? I always remember that today when I go in. There's people there that don't know what that is. We assume a lot when we go into these treatment centers that people have heard it all before. You know, I always take it from my perspective that it was all new to me. And they also brought us to meetings off-site, to other AA meetings that they had to cooperate with to do that. And those, I'm always very patient and tolerant of treatment meetings that come into meetings because there's a lot of people that come in. And it's really important how I conduct myself because they're watching us. So those are just a few examples of my first trip to a treatment center that I heard the AA message through. Some of those people are here today that carried that message to me there. And the big thing about treatment is that it ends. It ends for everybody. It's not an ongoing life solution, as they all do. And so when I got out, what was I to do? I had information and tools that were given to me through the treatment center, but I remembered what other AA speakers that came onto that unit talked about. And that was, we read in the big book that, we as alcoholics can affect like no one else can another alcoholic. And that was really attractive to me, what those guys were saying up there, the men and the women. And I wanted to find that out. I knew of another way. I didn't have to live life as I was doing. But I was scared because all I knew was my treatment experience. And they were offering things like aftercare, which can be helpful and everything, but it's not a permanent solution nor a cure. So I ventured out and started doing that as much as I could. I went to a sober house and got a sponsor and started taking those suggestions. By the grace of God and fellowship of AA, I stayed sober through all that, and I can tell you about it here today. But a year or two in recovery, I worked those steps and started sponsoring guys, started doing some service work within the meeting, and that, how much time we got? And at most meetings, there's service commitments that go around, the sign-ups, and there is one for the local outpatient facility there that we bring in a meeting to go as meetings in our local town to carry the message to them there. An intergroup speaker would come, and we'd sit in a circle. And all I had to do was just introduce myself as this meeting, and here I am. And I found that that was, when I signed up to it and finally went to it, because I was just looking for a different experience, it was really amazing, the effect that had, as we've heard from other people, on the patients there. And those, all I had to do was shake guys' hands, look them in the eye, you know, remember their name, and just let them know, you know, I'm at this meeting if you ever want to show up. And I found that that affected them. And I started seeing those guys at meetings. And I started to find out that, you know what, if I'm not here, nobody else has signed up, who's down there doing that? You know, it really had a profound effect on me. So, and I started to realize that that was me in that chair. And I started to think, you know, I found my solution, AA, but, you know, I can't forget where I came from, and those people need that message carried to them, too. After a while, I started talking with a friend, and we had some guys that we were sponsoring, and we needed to go through the steps with them in the big book, and we said, hey, why don't we meet together on Sunday nights? Let's go through it. Let's have a step study. And just go through the big book. It'll be easier as a group. And we did that, and we worked the steps. And you know what? We had a nice little fellowship going. It was kind of an unofficial meeting. And we kind of wondered, you know, what do we do from here? You can only go so far with the guy before we need to carry the message to somebody else to keep this thing. And we saw a flyer from Intergroup that said the mental health ward at Fairview Hospital in Minneapolis needed meetings brought on the units, or at just one meeting. And we said, you know what? Let's try this once a month. We contacted them, and we went down there, and we had, a lot of us had never been on mental health ward, and we had just an amazing experience. And this was a bunch of guys that were newly working the steps. Some had worked the steps, and we found that our presence there, there was people there that had never been to an AA meeting. They were going to walk out of that mental health ward and probably maybe not ever go to an AA meeting. We were able to be there and carry that message to them. There were people there that were in Alcoholics Anonymous, that had not drank, they had not relapsed. They were there. They needed that meeting. They're, you know, somebody that suffers from mental illness and alcoholism. And there was people fresh off a drunk that were, you know, had been to many treatments. But we had found a lot of different people, and we saw ourselves in them. One guy always joked that I could be, you know, he went to treatment in the same building, and he said all I had to do was tell him what I was thinking, and they would have locked me up in there just the same. And we all know that. I mean, I've had the same thoughts as a lot of those guys do, and women. And then we also started to realize we were a men's group. We were going that there was women coming on there, and women wouldn't show up in the meeting because we didn't have women that were coming in with us. And we thought, wow, we need more women here. But as it turns out, we started to realize we were having a lot more, you know, fun and a better experience when we were doing that once a month. Let's see if we can find more of this. And what I ended up doing is we contacted the treatment center and asked if there was more opportunities to do that. And we were able to do that. We started taking that meeting there on every Sunday during the month. So every Sunday, we started to form our own group. It was called Made a Decision. And we had group consciences. We had a group inventory. We said, let's make sure we do this responsibly. We looked in the workbook that you were talking about and this sort of thing. The district was a little sketchy of trying to use that. We had enough people there that we could have some service positions and see how that went. And our experiences there were astonishing. We started to realize, like, this is what they were talking about in the big book. When Bill and Dr. Bob went into these hospitals and started sharing their experience with these guys, you know, that was attractive to some, and they asked for help. And, you know, some people look at that and say, well, that's not realistic. That really doesn't happen today. Well, I was joking with Buddy beforehand. You know, it does in these treatment facilities because they're all locked up there for us, and we can go there and bring these meetings in. It's the first thing he said. I'm like, right on, we're going to get along, because that's the same way I think, especially in this mental health ward. It's a lockdown facility. They ain't going anywhere. And they sit through the meeting because they want to tell their counselor that they did that or whatever. And it's just like, and there was people that came back to those meetings with us. There still is today, that they came back and carried a message with us to that. A number of people. They've gotten sponsors, and they've worked steps, and they've recovered. It's just been an amazing experience to be a part of. So anyways, and it really made me understand the history and really feel connected with AA as a whole to do that. You know, and practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. You can help when no one else can. And I know all of you have felt this in this room, or at least most of you, is when you can feel that what these guys are talking about, that usefulness of just feeling from going from absolutely useless to feeling like you're the worst person on this planet to being somebody that can profoundly affect somebody else's life and then watch them help somebody else is a feeling like no other. So, anyways, the other thing we found, too, through that, going there on those Sunday nights, we had a fellowship that grew up about us. We were all connected in a 12-step spirit, going there to carry the message to that. We are no longer sitting in a discussion group trying to dredge up experiences that we've all heard before. We were carrying that message, and we believe that was what was intended to do for us. We were discovering our primary purpose, which we always heard, but we just had never experienced it. So, anyways... Kind of why these guys touched on so much. I can just relate so much, and I've had all the same experiences. Our relations with that facility were really paramount in that. We always wanted to respect what they were doing. These were mental health units that had, some of them had never seen AA before. Some of the staff members had no idea what AA was. When they're allowing us on there, that's kind of a higher security, and they never know what's going to happen. The greatest thing was after a couple meetings of doing that in some of these units, these staff members were so glad to see us because they know what kind of experiences these patients had after they went to the meetings. And they just, we always tried to respect the facility, but their guard just came down immediately, and they were just so happy to have us there. And, you know, I heard Tyler touch on this too. I mean, some of the hardest thing right now is I'm talking to some guys about this. Right now is things are winding down on this Fairview commitment, and it just seems like these commitments go on for so long. I love what you said, Andrew, about going there, and that is your meeting, and that's what you're responsible for. Sometimes our districts don't function the way they could. There's just not enough people that are willing to serve. So sometimes we got to take responsibility for these things. And right now we're in a flux. We're down to just a few members. Things change. People move away. I had a child. My wife and I were going. We just, Sunday nights are really hard to make at 8 o'clock. And so we're discussing how to responsibly change this. And it's just heartbreaking because it's just like it's been played so much of a role in our recoveries. And to watch these guys, I mean, every week we have somebody coming in saying, thank God you're here. Or, wow, I didn't know that's what AA did. What's the number? I'm going to go to AA when I get out. I mean, it's just like to think that we might not do that. It's crazy, but we've also tried to reach out to groups, and my home group has now taken over the third Sunday. So, I mean, we've got at least once a month in there. And talking, we've now started to realize that, you know what, we can make this even a bigger thing if maybe we wind it down and then carry the message to other groups and let them know what else is going on, which we heard from these guys too. And maybe we can bring more people in the fold on this and have these experiences with others and make it better for everybody. So anyways, there's so many things we can do to carry the message into treatment facilities. You can find out through your intergroup, through your district. The treatment center I'm at, I'm an alumni there, contact, so there's people that get out of there. And in my area, I'm a contact number. So if you have a treatment center, go back to them and give them your phone number and tell them you're willing to be a contact for Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of times when I'm called, they haven't taken any other aftercare, and I might be their only thread left. I'd like to just close with one quote, one of my favorite in the big book, from page 128 and 129, The Gaunt Prospector. Like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over his last ounce of food, our pick struck gold. Joy at our release from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. Father feels like he has struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he has barely scratched a limitless load, which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. Thank you for listening, and thank you for my life.